From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, it's time for Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. The latest figures available report that in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, more than one out of four deaths is due to heart disease. Since February is Heart Month, we're focusing on a major contributor to heart disease, obesity, and we're going to pose some questions out there that you're welcome to answer. You're, of course, welcome to answer or ask additional questions, but the questions we'd like to hear from you about: why is Kentucky among the top 10 most obese states in the nation? What can we do about this epidemic? We're interested also in your personal stories of overcoming or struggling with obesity or of just being overweight. So please feel free to join us during the program. We have phone lines open, and they will be open very soon during today's show. We encourage you to send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. With us today are Lori Gillum, and Lori is an advanced practice registered nurse with Appalachian Regional Healthcare based in Hazard. Lori has spent the 2 years with pulmonary critical care inpatient and outpatient service, and this past year with cardiology inpatient and outpatient services. Lori Gillum, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Karina Christopher is an assistant professor of nutrition and foods here at Eastern Kentucky University. So we know you had a long journey to get here this morning. Karina received her BS in nutrition and dietetics from Northwest Missouri State University and received her master's in science and community nutrition from EKU. She's also the nutrition consultant for EKU athletic teams. So there may be some interesting aspects of your experience that will be helpful in that regard as well. Karina, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, John.
Ladies, well, let me tell listeners again that you can interact with us on Twitter at WEKUEST. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, and we'll go ahead and open up the phone lines so you can get on the program if you choose to do so. 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. We'll be glad to hear your question or even your comment and or your personal story during today's Eastern Standard. Let's begin, ladies, with a definition of obesity. We hear that word tossed around a lot. Everybody who's fat is not obese. Is that correct?
No. And we define obesity and being overweight using the body mass index or the BMI. You may have heard physicians talk about that, where you calculate your rate based on your height and your weight. And it's put into a little chart that tells us, you know, this number represents you are overweight and this number represents that you're obese. It's not a perfect system. You know, if you have somebody who has a lot of muscle mass, they're going to weigh a lot more, so it's going to throw it off. But it is it's an indicator that we use to determine how great your risk is for developing certain chronic diseases like heart disease. So the higher your BMI, the more at risk you are for chronic disease.
So truck drivers, weightlifters, athletes may weigh more just because of the fact that they do physical work that builds muscle.
Exactly. The more weight that you have sometimes is muscle, because muscle will weigh more than fat. So it's not a perfect tool, but it is a good tool for physicians to use, nurses to use, to determine how at risk you are.
Is searching for BMI on the internet a wise approach, and merely just finding one of the little BMI calculators? Are they all pretty much the same?
They are the same, and it is calculated. If your BMI is greater than 30, you are considered obese, and if your BMI is greater than 25, then you are considered overweight. It is important to know where your BMI is so that you can help to maintain a healthy weight, which will improve your health and well-being.
So how do we define obesity? I mean, I know you mentioned, Karina, the BMI. At that point, of the crossover point on the BMI, did you say 30? Is that obesity?
25 is considered overweight. Mm-hmm. Greater than 30 is considered severe obesity.
And just to talk practically, okay, I'm 5'10", something like that. When would a person of my, a man of my stature, be obese? What would be the weight that you would expect might be an obese person in that range?
Well, there are charts that you can get to online. The CDC has a chart that you can get to, and you know, kind of graph it over. You know, if you're 5'10", this weight would represent, you know, what your BMI is. And you can get it if, you know, Google search is always an easy way to get to the BMI graph. And it's sometimes there's a range of weights that you can be, that you're still within a healthy range. And it, It's very hard to define. I mean, I can plug it into a computer and pull it up exactly. It's the same calculation that you would use for everybody, standard.
But it's, I know, I guess some of that changed in recent years. I know the doctors used to have charts in their offices, and they'd pull out this little slip and check, okay, this is your height, and how old are you, and a little bit about your lifestyle, and okay, this is where you really ought to be. Did that get adjusted recently?
It has adjusted slightly down, I guess? Yes, it has slightly been adjusted over the years. It is still used at every well child visit with your provider, with your health care provider, to maintain from infancy through adult that you are maintaining a healthy weight based on your height. And they cover that at every well child visit with the parents and the child as they get older to talk with them about healthy body weight.
Lori, you're working with cardiac patients. The relationship between obesity and heart problems during this month of February, Heart Month, how bad is the contribution that obesity is making to that problem?
Significantly. They go hand in hand. When you're obese, it causes you to have a lot of times it will cause you to have a higher cholesterol level and triglyceride level, and that affects your heart disease. Again, if you blood pressure is elevated a lot of times based on your weight. People who are overweight have high blood pressure. They have a higher fasting blood glucose, which will also lead to diabetes, another risk factor for heart disease. So they go hand in hand.
A person is obese and they decide to change their lifestyle and they maybe change their diet, they bring their weight down. Are the negative effects of living a lifestyle or a certain number of years of obesity or being overweight, is that reversible?
It is reversible. And when people make the choice to make healthier decisions and exercise more and eat healthier and get their blood pressure and their blood sugars under control along with their cholesterol and triglycerides, it does make a difference. It's never too late to stop and turn it around.
Karina, as a nutritionist, I've heard people say that medical doctors don't know anything about nutrition.
Well, I am a dietitian, so I totally agree with that. I am a little bit biased, though. But dietitians are a little bit more precise in our recommendations, so we understand a little bit more biochemically and physiology, and we have a really good understanding of how food affects the body, not just emotionally, but also physically. And so we have, you know, a better grasp on how to help that individual maintain healthier body weights, make better choices. You know, we take into play, you know, you're on a budget, and what can we do to make sure that you get some healthier foods, and what can we do to make sure that you still enjoy eating food if you have to reduce your salt intake or you have to reduce your fat intake. So we have a little bit more specialized schooling to help us prepare for that. Physicians, you know, they have a good idea of what happens, but they don't have the in-depth knowledge that a dietitian would have.
Is that changing?
No, definitely not.
That is not.
No. In fact, I think dietitians are getting even more specialized because now we need to understand genetics more and we need to understand more biochemistry. So I think we're even more specialized than we used to be.
So you have a general practitioner, a family physician that you see, maybe you take the children to them. You should not count on that being your sole source for information about overweight, obesity, diet, and so forth?
No, I don't think so. And I think everybody in the healthcare team has a very important role. You know, nurses have a very important role. Physicians have a very important role. Even pharmacists and dietitians are there too. We each have our own specialties and we're there working as a team to make that individual healthier, to have a, you know, a long-lasting, healthy, good quality of life. And so going to each specialty and getting their recommendations and their advice is very important.
And although we have, at the hospital, we have dietitians that help us every day on a day-to-day basis, and they're easy access for us in the hospital, there's also now being greater utilized as outpatient services, and they're being part of the healthcare team in the clinic setting as well, especially with diabetes, juvenile diabetes, to help them understand their diet and exercise. And so, yeah, they play a vital role, both inpatient and outpatient.
And Lori, as a nurse practitioner, you're a lot like a doctor. Most people think in terms of you may even go to your family physician, and a nurse practitioner may be the person you consult with. How do you feel about that issue of those in the field of general medicine not being knowledgeable about nutrition?
Well, and to some extent, I greatly agree. dietary is as much a specialty as any other field, cardiology, pulmonary, oncology, because there's different aspects to it. And for them to be able to know the ins and outs of what to eat, when to eat, and different options and different resources that we may not know about. I may know about different heart medicines. She would know more about which foods is better for you and what other options you may have, what you can substitute things with. And that's what's important, because there are, just because you don't like one does not mean that there's not another option for a dietary supplement out there. And she has better knowledge of that.
We have general practitioners. We go to a doctor and feel pretty good about ourselves, getting regular checkups and so forth. People with heart disease have cardiac care physicians and assistants. People with cancer have oncologists who work with them. People with muscle problems or other issues have specialists that they work with. Should everyone have a nutritionist?
I think so. I have worked clinically before in hospitals and outpatients, and I was, you know, specialized. I worked with cancer patients, and they have a very different nutritional plan and interventions than a cardiac patient would have. And so getting that person that really understands the disease is very, very important in the ins and the outs of what's changing physiologically and how medications are going to interact with their food. So it is a specialty, just like cardiologists are specialized types of physicians. You have dietitians who are very specialized as well and can understand different diseases and, you know, more specifically, you know, what do I cook to, you know, make this salt-free food actually have taste? You know, that's a complaint I get a lot from individuals. So we do have specialized nutritionists and dietitians as well.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, and obesity, the epidemic of obesity in the Commonwealth, is our topic of the day, and we encourage you to get on board. We have an email from Kelly that we'll get to in just a few moments. We certainly encourage you to send your questions, your comments, and personal stories. I suspect there may be somebody out there with a story to tell about their efforts at overcoming obesity or just the general overweight problem. Feel free to email them to us, as Kelly has done, WEKU Eastern Standard@gmail.com. And if you'd rather speak with us, and we'd love to hear your voice, call us at 800-621-8890. You can even send us a tweet if you can send your message or your question within 140 characters at WEKUEST. It's Eastern Standard, and the epidemic of obesity is our topic today. Why is there so much obesity in Kentucky and in this region of the country, West Virginia, Tennessee, and surrounding areas? What can we do about the epidemic? We're interested in your personal stories. 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard@gmail.com. This is Eastern Standard on WEKU. I'm John Hingsbergen with our guests, Lori Gillum and Karina Christopher. We're talking obesity in the Commonwealth. You are invited to be part of the program by calling 800-621-8890 or by sending an email, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Post on our Facebook page, and we've had some programs that have quite a bit of dialogue going on, mainly after the program. Feel free to do that. And interact among yourselves. We'll make sure we have a post about this program there, which you can use for follow-up. And also send us a tweet at WEKUEST. Let's take a look at an email that came in from Kelly. And Kelly took the time to write a very detailed message. Thank you for doing so. The obesity problem in this state is due to food deserts, and I think she means deserts rather than desserts, in both the rural and the urban areas. I live in southeastern Kentucky, and there are few options for fresh whole foods that are also affordable. So many of us are eating highly processed foods because of the affordability of them and the fact that they keep for long periods. I also attribute to economic and physical depression. When your food budget is small, it takes a great effort to plan nutrient-rich whole food meals for your family. When the future looks bleak, as it does for so many folks in the mountains, the effort it takes to access and prepare these good foods becomes even greater. We're losing our old make-do ways in the mountains. Our traditional food ways are also being lost. There are fewer gardens and fewer from-scratch cooks. Nutrition advice we receive now is also poor, encouraging people to eat highly processed health foods like margarine and low-fat foods. I'm very much optimistic when I see options coming into our region like Old Home Place Farms CSA, Grow Appalachia Support for Gardening, community garden projects, as well as stores that are making the effort to carry local fresh and even organic foods, like Railroad Street Mercantile in Whitesburg and other stores that have recently opened. However, the work becomes to make these options available to the people at large. Kelly, thank you again for taking time to write that detailed message to WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Karina.
I think Kelly has a really good pulse on, you know, what is really going on in the state of Kentucky. We do have some unique problems, but they're not unique just to Kentucky. There are a lot in the southern region and Appalachian region itself. And there is hard, you know, it is very hard to find fresh produce in local areas. And you can find food deserts, which food desert just basically means there's not a good location to buy fresh produce and healthy natural foods in your area. I mean, we have
never
food
heard
deserts.
That, never heard that term before today.
Yeah, we have food deserts in the middle of Louisville because you might live in the middle of Louisville, may not have good transportation, and all you have is a convenience store. So food deserts occur, you know, in urban and rural areas. But, you know, you do have in rural areas, especially fresh produce at your grocery store is more expensive than the processed foods. And it becomes very frustrating, not just for individuals, but for healthcare providers, because we want people to make better decisions. But there's a lot of barriers. I recommend a lot of people do frozen foods. You can do some canned. Some are lower in sodium if you get canned foods. And there's a lot of really great farmers in Kentucky and farmers markets. I'm just always impressed by how, you know, passionate they are about their food. I've been to several, and there, you know, there's always really unique foods, things that, you know, may not be in every part of the state that may be unique to other parts of the state. So I do encourage a lot of people even to have their own garden. It takes a little bit more time, but there's so much pride, and it's a good lesson to teach children if you have them on where foods come from and what they look like, and a potato is in the ground and you still eat it. You know, there's a lot of lessons that can be learned, and it is a barrier, and I think, you know, legislators know that and they understand it, and we'll get there eventually. But, you know, if people can try to get to a dietitian to get specific strategies for themselves and their families, I think that will help improve and cross over those barriers.
Lori Gillum, working in cardiac care, your reaction to Kelly's comments?
Well, and also being from Hazard, I agree with her. We are lucky in Hazard that we have a farmer's market where our local people bring their produce from their gardens there to sell during certain months of the year, but of course they're not available in the winter. However, there are things that you can do. You can purchase them and freeze them and can them yourself, and then you don't have all that processed stuff put in them. But what she touched on as far as cost is a very true problem that we have. You know, we have a high unemployment rate right now, and that affects people. And it's very difficult for you to spend $20 in fruit as a snack for your kids when you can spend $20 on several items of processed food that can fix two or three meals.
Well, you know, the 99-cent menu at the drive-thru looks like a pretty good deal.
Exactly. And that's high fat intake, high caloric intake, and it's easier and cheaper and busy. Everybody's busy. So it's very quick and easy to just drive through the drive-thru and get them a meal for, you know, $3 that would have cost you 10 or 12 to fix. And with times being the way they are economically, it does make it very difficult.
How do you both feel about the fact that when you go to the drive-thru now, I find it very encouraging. I have to admit that I've been to a drive-thru, so I see these things. But next to items, you're now seeing calories and fat levels. And I guess once you become a little bit educated, you're going to be appalled when you discover what's in that, you know, double patty hamburger, the brand name we will not mention, but how much fat is in there, and the salt level, at least, is there some legal requirement now that the fast food restaurants and others are required to put that information out there?
I don't think legally there is a requirement for them. I think it is from pressure from community and from health organizations, because it's important. People don't realize that that burger might be 1,800 calories, which is essentially what you should eat in a day. So I think it's a very wonderful move that they're making toward making people – knowledge is power. And when people have that knowledge available there, and two, it makes you feel a little guilty. So maybe instead of the double, you'll choose the single because of that.
And I think, you know, there are some states that have that as their law. And so if there is a chain restaurant in that state and they've had to do it, then they branch out and, you know, all the other chain restaurants do it. And it helps people make better decisions. I've been guilty of stopping by fast food, too, when we've got two soccer games or, you know, practice. But you know, making the better decision, do you need the double cheeseburger or can you, you know, get the salad, I mean, or the wrap that's a lot less calories and a lot lower in fat, especially for our children, which is really important at that age. And then back to what we were talking about with the canning and freezing, I wanted to add that a lot of counties have fantastic extension offices, and they do a lot of classes on canning and freezing because it is an easy way to buy all your produce in the winter from the farmer's market, local farmers, and save it. And it's really convenient because your extension offices are really valuable resources. They also have a lot of classes on how to cook on a budget and eat on a budget. You know, soup beans is really popular in eastern Kentucky. And, you know, buying the dried beans, they're really, really cheap. And that makes a very huge meal for individuals. So, you know, there are things that you can do on a budget, and you don't have to go just to the dietitian as a resource, but the extension offices are really fantastic too.
This is Eastern Standard. We're talking obesity in the Commonwealth. Is it an epidemic? What can we do about the epidemic? If it were, you know, typhoid, we'd be working really, really hard to change that. But what are we doing? What are you personally doing to help reverse the epidemic of obesity? 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. 8890. You can do as Kelly did a few minutes ago and send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. But everyone doesn't take the time to write all that detail that Kelly did. But feel free to send a brief note, send us a 140 characters on Twitter at WEKUEST. That phone number again, 800-621-8890. I'm especially interested in personal stories. Anyone out there have a great story to tell us about how you have overcome obesity, changed your life, become a healthier person, and how that's worked out and maybe help set goals. You know, we have the TV shows nowadays. We have The Biggest Loser, and I think there are a couple of others, the names of which I don't know because I haven't watched them. Well, how does that contribute? Is that a good thing, The Biggest Loser, and people who are, you know, 450 pounds getting down to 120?
Well, I honestly have not seen The Biggest Loser. I know about The Biggest Loser and all the controversy, especially this week with the winner who won this week. But I think people have to be very, very careful when they watch shows like that because some of the ways that they lose weight are not good for everybody. So it is very important that, you know, if you want to watch it for interest and see what people do, that is fine. But it is not realistic for everybody to do the methods that they do. You know, you really should find your physician, you know, get healthy screenings often, see your dietitian for what is really best for you, what's going to work out for your, you know, individual needs. And those shows are entertaining, but not very realistic for the population of people.
I agree. And I think that it is about lifestyle changes. It's about making modifications. And, you know, I think one first step that many people can take is to go on the website of the American Heart Association, which is www.aha.org, and they've got Life Simple 7, and that is 7 steps that you can take to achieve excellent cardiovascular health. I'm sorry. And the first one is no smoking, no tobacco products. And, you know, in eastern Kentucky especially, you know, we have a high percentage rate of tobacco use. The next would be to keep your healthy body weight, and that's a BMI of less than 25. The third one is at least 150 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity or 75 minutes of vigorous intensity activity at least 3 times a week. And then eat a healthy diet consistent with the American Heart Association guidelines, which is what we have been talking about, low sodium, low cholesterol, low fat. It's important to be screened. You know, at age 30, most people get their screenings then of a baseline cholesterol, fasted lipid profile, and your cholesterol should be less than 200. And monitor your blood pressure. Blood pressure should be less than 120 over 80, and your blood sugar should be checked at age 30 as well, and your fasting blood glucose should be less than 100. All of these will help you to maintain cardiovascular health, and, you know, they'll also make you feel better because when we're more active, when we're healthy, we have to take less medicine for diabetes and heart disease, you just feel better and you enjoy life more.
Lori Gillum is an advanced practice registered nurse with Appalachian Regional Healthcare working in cardiac care. We have Karina Christopher, nutritionist, and she's on the staff here actually at Eastern Kentucky University, works with students and athletes as well. So we have some experts here to discuss obesity and react to your questions or your comments at 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Let's go to Michelle, who is from the town is called Harold, Michelle. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, not familiar with Harold. Where is Harold?
It borders Pikeville.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Well, thank you for calling in from the range of 90.1 WEKP. Michelle, go right ahead with your comments or your question.
I think part of our obesity issues is we were raised in a culture of no portion control. And like for my grandmother, the more you ate, the more it was her way of saying you're healthy.
Eat up, honey. You look like you're a little weak today, right?
Yeah, right. And it's just like her way of like, she was a great cook, so that was her pride of, look, I made this great, delicious meal. And of course, it was delicious, but it's very high in fat and calories.
Absolutely.
And another issue, I think, is we go into a grocery store. When you first walk in the door, you see all these high-calorie, high-fat foods in your face as soon as you go to the store.
I agree with that. And to add on to that, what we see on television doesn't help either. You know, every 10 minutes we see an advertisement for food. So you're right about that. Absolutely.
I've recently completely cut junk food out of my diet, and I've recently cut out all pop and water flavoring. And in 2 months, I lost 11 pounds.
Good wow. for you. Well done.
And people don't realize portion control, and I count my calories now, and people's like, don't you count fat? But when you're counting your calories, you're picking those lower calorie, better for you foods. They're naturally going to be lower in fat and all the other things you don't want.
They are.
So if most people took just looked at what they're eating, they would be amazed.
They would, and you're absolutely right. Sometimes the first step is just portion control. You know, and a lot of people, they really love that home cooking, and I am one of those people. I love home-cooked food, and I would love to try your grandmother's food. But if you can just watch your portion sizes, sometimes that cuts at least half of what you were eating before, and that's always a good step to, you know, help you make better decisions. So I think your strategy is very spot on. You know, portion sizes have exploded in the United States, and we've demanded it. We've demanded more food with less money, and so we've kind of done it to ourselves. But if we can retrain ourselves to watch our portion sizes and make better decisions, decrease our soda intake, and that's always a great start.
Michelle, thank you so much for being part of our program today.
Thank you, guys. You guys have a great day.
You too, and congratulations again on the weight loss, and keep it up. 800-621-8890 is our phone number. You're welcome to get on board and be part of our conversation about obesity. That's 800-621-8890. Talking about home cooking, Kentucky home cooking. What is bad about Kentucky home cooking that we should be avoiding? And what are the good elements that we can embrace and use for our well-being, for good heart care, for to maintain our weight?
Well, in Kentucky, we're known for cooking with a lot of lard that has now, I think, has cut down dramatically, but we still use a lot of grease, and we cook a lot of greasy foods. We fry a lot of meats, and to fry food, and my mother makes the best fried chicken. However, that is not something you should routinely eat. We need to bake more. We need to grill more. You know, choose leaner cuts of meat. And those are things that I think would help us. But frying of foods, and, you know, in around Eastern Kentucky, cornbread is one of, you know, we're all known for it because your mom teaches you, because her mom taught her. But cornbread is a very high-fat bread. It's one of the higher ones. It's my favorite.
Who would think that? I mean, what's healthier than corn?
Well, and it is very good, but you have to monitor your intake of it.
I agree. And Kentucky's food culture is so outstanding, and I would never want to change that.
No.
I mean, I think it needs to stay the way it is, and those traditions need to continue. But again, making better decisions, not eating fried chicken and cornbread every single day. But, you know, once a week, there is absolutely nothing wrong with
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
You know, and we do. In Kentucky, we cook a lot of ham, and pork is a very important part of our diet, too, which can be, you know, in some cuts, very high in sodium, which leads to some heart disease. So making better decisions there, maybe a pork tenderloin instead of, you know, your ham, that's a little bit higher in sodium. So making better decisions, but not totally ruining what we have in Kentucky, which is outstanding as far as food culture and identity.
I certainly want to see if we can identify some elements of Kentucky's food culture that are healthy and something we should consider and look into and eat more often. Maybe our listeners will have some suggestions. 800-621-8890. Let's talk to Kay from Lexington. Kay, thanks for being part of today's Eastern Standard. Go right ahead. Are you there, Kay?
Oh, yes. Hi. Thank you for having me on your show.
We're grateful that you called.
Yes. I was told by someone recommended a book called The pH Miracle, Balance Your Diet, Reclaim Your Health by Robert O. Young, Ph.D., and Shelley Redford Young, or his wife. And it's about your pH balance from alkalinity, acidity.
Yes, I have. I haven't read that book specifically, but I've heard a lot of, about diets like that. And one thing that's kind of hard to explain in an afternoon, but our body maintains very close control of a neutral acidity. So as soon as you eat something, whether it's acid or base, it's going to try to get to a normal level in our body anyway, no matter what we eat. And you know, some of the foods that are really acidic, like lemons, are really, really great for us. Some of the foods that are very alkaline, you know, also like milk, are very good for us. So we, you know, I think sometimes you can get to some of those books that are a little bit more extreme. And really, once you eat any of those foods, the body's going to change their acidity or alkalinity to make it more natural.
And I think it's a very...
It really opens your mind up to what you're putting in your body.
And I think that's great, and we all should stop and think more about what we're putting in our bodies. But I also think it's important for you to discuss with your healthcare provider any diets that you change, because some of the diets, the extreme diets, can affect your health in various ways. So it's always important to speak with your healthcare provider before choosing an extreme diet.
Kay, thank you for calling.
Stress is eating more vegetables over meat and things like that.
Good advice indeed. Kay, thank you. We need to move on. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, 800-621-8890. Send us an email, WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com. Follow us and message us on Twitter at WEKUEST. It's Eastern Standard on WEKU. The epidemic, grasping for the word, the epidemic of obesity in the Commonwealth is our topic today. 800-621-8890. We're live on Thursday morning for your call, your questions, your comments, your personal stories on the topic of obesity. With us in the studio, Lori Gillum of Appalachian Regional Healthcare, working in cardiology inpatient and outpatient services. Karina Christopher is Assistant Professor of Nutrition and Foods at Eastern Kentucky University, and she's basically our nutritionist on call this morning at 800-621-8890. Let's go back to the phone and talk to Jay from Lexington. Jay, thank you for being part of Eastern Standard. Go right ahead. Are you there, Jay?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. First of all, I want to say that I don't have any of the answers to these problems that exist. However, I did spend 2 years volunteering out in Lawrence County and Martin County, so I got a pretty good idea of what some of the problems are. But the solutions, once again, are tough. Regarding the food deserts, I mean, that certainly is true. For example, they have a Save-A-Lot, but all they have is iceberg lettuce. They don't have any spinach. They don't have the other super green stuff that is really good for you. And I think I read somewhere that iceberg lettuce has virtually no nutrition in it. Regarding restaurants and going out to eat, in Melissa, there's really only two. There's a Mexican restaurant and there's a Chinese restaurant. Mexican restaurant isn't bad. Chinese is one that, you know, you can only really tolerate maybe once every 6 weeks or so. The rest of them are all fast food restaurants, and I think there's about 10 of them. And when you see people in the McDonald's restaurants that are overweight and obese and buying those super big high-calorie lattes and so forth, it's very difficult to be charitable to them in the way they treat their own bodies. So that's kind of tough. We had a boys' club that we would have on Saturday mornings, and half the kids would show up with, at 9 o'clock in the morning with 20-ounce Cokes or 20-ounce Mountain Dews, which we would take them away, put them in the refrigerator until after the program. But, you know, that's acceptable behavior. So and they have a fitness center there as well. I've been to a couple of them, and they're not well attended except for the weightlifting guy. only my comment to all that is there seems to be a lack of interest in this whole subject by the people that live in at least the two counties that I was exposed to.
Jay, thank you for those comments. We have Karina and Lori to respond.
Well, I would just like to say that it may be a lack of interest, but I also think it's nobody's given them strategies to help make better choices. You know, it's easy for us to say or read in the newspaper, well, just make portion sizes, but it's really a lot harder when you're in grassroots trying to, you know, assist people with making better decisions. And sometimes it's just helping them go through it. Once you get over that first hurdle and make better decisions and they start to feel better, then they really do get motivated. But it's really always getting through that first hurdle where they're, you know, I can't do it, I can't afford this, this tastes really good, I don't like that food. Just trying to ease them into that next step, then they're like, oh, wow, I do feel better. You know, it was easy for me to cut, you know, my Mountain Dew out of my diet. So, you know, I think getting them through that first step is important, but sometimes they don't know who to go to or they don't know what resources they have available to do that.
And a lot of times we just don't have those resources available in certain areas. You know, in the town I grew up in Cumberland, in Harlan County, there wasn't a fitness center, you know. So in the cold weather and in the snow, you know, did you go out there and walk as much? No. But it seemed like we were encouraged more because we didn't have the internet. We didn't have the video games to keep us inside more. So we were encouraged to be outside. We played outside until it was dark. Now our environments have changed. You can't always let your children out past dark. You know, video games help attract kids to be inside more. When they're inside, they're snacking. So, you know, it is about education to people and encouraging them and making them see that you can do it in small steps. And, you know, sometimes we want to say, oh, you need to do this, you need to do that. And sometimes doing something at 100% right off the get-go is not the best for everybody. And it is small changes that will make that an availability of things. And they're not always available in certain areas.
Jay mentioned that issue of restaurants and availability of healthy foods. I mean, I spend my share of time on the highway. And when I'm hungry along the way, the choices are pretty difficult because there's the same thing at every exit, practically. Same restaurants, the same chain food restaurants. What does a person do who spends any time on the road and may need to access drive-thrus? You have some tips on how a person can maintain a healthy lifestyle and still be able to dine in that fashion?
There's several strategies. It kind of depends on what restaurant you're most interested in. You know, you can always look online what their nutrition facts are, how many calories are in certain foods. There's also some good rules of thumb. Anything that's, you know, grilled or baked is always going to be an option that's better than something like a fried chicken sandwich. The more vegetables you can put on that meal, you know, if you can add lettuce to your Subway sandwich or cucumbers or green peppers, I mean, Subway has lots of vegetables that you can add. You know, swapping out fries for a side salad with just a little bit of dressing on the side, you know, on that salad can also be an option. Diet soft drinks or water are always better options than, you know, the 20-ounce Pepsi or Coke that you might be getting. Getting, you know, a little snack of the yogurt parfait at McDonald's is sometimes even a better option. So some restaurants are doing better. They just don't always make it really obvious on their menu that they have those choices available because they're not the biggest sellers.
And a lot of times when you're traveling, I think it's important to plan time to sit down and eat, because if you're driving and you're rushing, you're going to go for the sandwich you can hold in your hand versus the salad or the baked potato that needs you to manage a fork to eat it. And so you can't hardly manage driving and that at the same time. So if you can arrange for, you know, 20 minutes to go inside somewhere, choose your food a little healthier, like she said, vegetables, anytime you can get them on a sandwich, in a salad, you're always going to do better. But, you know, you need that time to sit down or else you're going to choose the fries and the sandwich to hold in your hand.
Let's go back to the phone and talk to Beverly, who has called us on 800-621-8890. Beverly from Waco. Thanks for calling, Beverly.
Thank you. This interests me very much. I guess it interests most people in this state. A few years ago when I was in school, I had to do a paper about the culinary pleasures in Appalachian Kentucky. And I found it interesting. I quoted some things from Hillbilly Women by Kathy Kahn, and she told how the land grabbers came in several years ago when the mountain people, they were living quietly and they worked their land for food, raised some domestic animals, and they'd had a very quiet, peaceful existence. You know, they had plenty of fruits and vegetables, but then the land grabbers came in and their dreams, they put the people to work, of course, very, very cheaply, and dreams of prosperity turned into a nightmare of hard work and low wages. Coal camps spread poverty, disease, and malnutrition. And people, because they turned from the land, they ate what could be dried and would keep well. So, of course, that was very high in carbohydrates. And it seems like that has kind of trickled down to us today. And because of that, people just tend to grab what is easy. And I really do believe we have tried more and more to incorporate into our diet something from the garden every single day. Of course, I know some people can't do that, and things are very expensive. But if you could just try to make it a habit to put fruits and vegetables in all the time, it would make so very much difference. And I really believe that the reason things have ended up like they have and that we are so high on the scale as far as obesity is concerned is because of things that started a long, long time ago and they passed down. Even though they taste good, you know, it's just not what we should be doing.
And I agree with you. I think that as we get more modern, it is easier to take the quick and easy route. You're right. And in the past, every family had big gardens, and everybody worked hard in them. They raised their own cattle. And now it's just not a situation that we can do all that. So it is now, like we said, choices. And it's looking at what we're putting in our body and offering more things. You're absolutely right. If you put fruits and vegetables on the table, everybody gets accustomed to eating them. If you never put them on a table, your children aren't going to get accustomed to eating them. They're not going to enjoy them and learn to appreciate them. So I think you're right. You have to put them on the table as often as you can and keep encouraging your children.
When we talk about Kentucky cooking and good stuff, we think of the stereotypical, the fried chicken and the meats of ham and lots of carbohydrates, potatoes and so forth. What about canning? What about fruits and vegetables that are canned and the home processes that set those things? Not that anybody does it, or that many people do that anymore, but isn't that part of our culture and our tradition as well? And isn't that a healthy approach?
It is a much healthier approach. And actually, when I've talked to extension agents in the past, it's actually growing as far as the people that are doing it now, because there are people are trying to save money and trying to, you know, get a lot more local food. But, you know, if you can at home, you can always control the amount of sodium that you put in your foods that you can at home. And if you freeze any of your fruits and vegetables, you're not really putting any sodium on them at all, and they're not processed at all. I mean, other than what you do to, you know, cook them real fast and freeze them real fast, there's not really any processing going on, so you have a lot of good nutritional content. And Kentucky does grow a lot of produce, and we have a really great environment for that. Even if you have a little raised bed, you know, that you have out your back door, where maybe you grow just a couple of things that you really, you know, use a lot, like tomatoes, or, you know, onions are really easy to grow. I can't get rid of mine. So, you know, all those things are really good for your family, you know, that you're always having available, teaching your kids where foods come from. Fruits and vegetables are important. You know, they learn about the My Plate in school, and half their plate is fruits and vegetables. And if you continue teaching that at home, it becomes habit for them. And those are good habits to develop.
800-621-8890 is our number. Obesity in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, is it an epidemic? And how do we control that epidemic, reverse it? Your questions, comments, personal stories, encourage. We've heard a couple of interesting personal stories of folks having success overcoming obesity. 800-621-8890. Plenty of time for you to be part of today's program on this Thursday morning. We did have an email from Minor in Hazard. Minor writes, I've noticed that most children do not participate in outside activity or sports anymore, like I did when I was growing up. They confine themselves to inside activities like video games, which continues into adulthood. The same with communication. No one goes and sees anyone anymore. We have instant communication. So we are ladies, I guess, subject to our culture and our technology is a negative in that regard.
It is. It is. And it's important, the Stay Active programs that are getting more and more publicity nowadays are better, because get them outside. You know, cut off the amount of time that they're allowed to play video games. You know, what Miner said is true. That's exactly what we did growing up. We were outside. We were visiting our family, visiting our friends, riding bicycles. We didn't have those video games, you know, so it's important to encourage all children to be active, and if they can find a sport that they enjoy, whether it be softball or baseball, gymnastics, football, something to keep them active and to give them a drive to be more active and to, you know, participate in things, it will do better. But I totally agree. The video games, the lack of encouragement to participate and stay active is a problem.
And I'd also like to add to that, you know, since we're talking about Kentucky, and Kentucky's unique in so many different ways and a beautiful state to live in, even if you have a child who doesn't enjoy sports, you know, they're not into the soccer, they're not into basketball, football, baseball, you can explore, you know, explore your own backyard. And that's at least getting them out of the house where they're moving. You know, one of the bad things about video games is that you're just sitting there and you're sedentary and you do a lot of mindless eating while you're playing video games. Of course, there's the Wii or, you know, the Xbox that has some active games, and I've played those in sweat, you know, so you can do some sort of aerobic capacity there. But even if you're just watching television, you're being introduced every 8 minutes to, you know, food advertisements. And, you know, they, children's programming, or they have more food advertisements than adult ever, you know, programs do. So that's always, the more you see food, the more you're going to eat it. So even if they go outside and explore, even if you, you know, go to Walmart and do laps around Walmart if you need to try to get your kids more active.
There's some of these stores are big enough, yeah.
Yeah,
they are.
You can make a few miles out of that.
And if you look at the state of Kentucky, so beautiful. We have so many beautiful state parks. Mm-hmm. In Cumberland, we were lucky. Kingdom Come State Park is there. And it's very beautiful. Lots of trails, lots of things to hike and fish. You know, being active doesn't mean just playing basketball. You know, a lot of kids, my son in particular, loves to fish and to hunt. It's just a matter of getting them out, getting them moving.
Let's hear from Michael from Danville. I think this is going to be an inspiring story that Michael has for us. Thanks for calling, Michael. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just, you know, people were talking about, you know, no choices but eating like fast food and stuff like that. But, I mean, I've lost 100 pounds, and I drive a truck for a living, and, I mean, I would eat McDonald's just about every day, and as long as you watch your calories, basically you can lose weight. Especially if you get some exercise, you can definitely lose the weight.
Do you appreciate, Michael, seeing the calories and the fat content now on the menu when you go through the fast food places?
Yeah, it definitely makes it easier. I mean, the fat, you know, fat isn't what really gets you. It's, you know, more carbs and calories and stuff like that. Like, and I'm a cheapskate too, so I would actually eat off the dollar menu every day. And like, as long as you limit your calories to like 2,000, 1,800, something like that, you know, depending on what your body size is, you're definitely going to lose some weight. It can be done. You know, I was on the road 3 and 4 days, 5 days a week sometimes, and still would, you know, on that. In 9 months, from January 2010 to September 2010, I lost 70 pounds in 9 months.
Now,
great
how did you
job.
Do that? Did you do that just through diet?
Yeah, basically, well, it started out through diet, and then I got more active, you know, as the weight started coming off, and, you know, now I'm a dedicated cross, you know, working out 3 and 4 days a week and, you know, doing what I can, but as long as now, pretty much I eat what I want. I'm on a paleo diet as of right now, since January 1st, but, I mean, I pretty much ate what I want for the last year and a half and didn't gain a pound back just because I worked out so hard.
Michael, thank you so much for that story. I think you're going to be the last caller on today's Eastern Standard. Michael from Danville. Okay, Lori and Karina in the studio, as we wrap up today's program, let's give our listeners some tips. I mean, you said something, Karina, about MyPlate. Is that an approach we're taking now in terms of how to pick our diet? And how does that compare to the food pyramid or some of the other charts and things we've seen over the years?
Well, the food pyramid is an antique now.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, well, so am I.
You're told our age.
Yeah. The MyPlate now reflects recommendations from the American Heart Association, the American Diabetes Association, and the American Institute of Cancer Research, because it encourages the consumption of fruits and vegetables with whole grains and lower lower lean meats, and then also a little bit of dairy to get your calcium and vitamin D, which is really, really important. And it's easy to find. You can go to choosemyplate.gov and or .org, excuse me, and you can go there and you can see it. It's, you know, very visible. You just, you know, you have your plate. Half of your plate is fruits and vegetables. The other half is lean meats and whole grains for the fiber. And then you have just a little bit of dairy up at the top. It's visual. It's easy to understand. And if you look down at your plate at breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and you don't have half of it with fruits and vegetables, then you need to add them.
So it's My Plate. Look for My Plate online. Yes. Karina, thank you. Lori, your 30 seconds of a tip for our listeners.
Be active. Watch your salt intake, monitor your blood pressure, and have your checkups with your healthcare provider of choice to make sure that they're monitoring your cholesterol, your blood glucose levels, and your HDL and triglycerides.
All right. Thank you, Lori Gillum. Thank you, Karina Christopher, for being with us on this week's Eastern Standard.
Thank you for having us.
Eastern Standard is a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. Our associate producers are Andrew Moorhead and Richard Turner. Andrew put today's program together. Our technical director is Jonice Franklin. Julie Tennell is on the phones, and Richard Turner is taking a look at social media and keeping us up to date on that area. We remind you this show will be available online later today. It will be repeating Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. And we're interested in your comments anytime, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. For WEKU, I'm John Hingsbergen.